listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, May 27th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here.
Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, as always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, for tonight's topic, we're going to be keeping it nice and light and breezy. We're just going to be talking about the meaning of life. And we're going to answer all of the questions you've ever had about anything. So this is the broadcast to listen to.
The meaning of life. Of course, Dr. Kelly would correct us and say it's not the meaning of life that's the question. It's the meaning of my life. What is the meaning of your life, my life, as opposed to the existential question of what's the meaning of life? So I think that's we're going to talk about all different ways anyway. Historically,
there you go.
Human beings in their insatiable. Are we here?
Yeah, we're here.
I was going to say that historically, human beings have had this insatiable curiosity to understand life and the universe and who we are and our consciousness and of course all those questions that lead to what is life on Earth? Like, what is it to be a human being? What is it to be, on the planet Earth? And what is the meaning of that? And so we're naturally curious, but it's philosophically, we could go on and on and on. But really, the bottom line is, it's what meaning do you give to your own life? You agree, Michael?
I would agree completely because, well, we're too diverse a people. There can be no one meaning to life. There can be no one meaning to human existence, and there can be no one meaning to a people, to a culture, because we're all individuals and we're so diverse, we're so varied, that it would just be impossible to cover so many diverse perspectives, diverse lives, and diverse needs. If we all had the same, meaning to our lives, there would be a lot of overlap, and frankly, life would be a little bit less interesting. It's always engaging and invigorating to find somebody with a different meaning, a different branch of life that they're pursuing,
Yeah, I agree, totally. Then Dr. Kelly, of course, would then say, what's the purpose? Do you have a sense of purpose? So what is the meaning of your life, and then what gives you that sense of purpose? So I really do think that the those two words, those two experiences or questions kind of go hand in hand. Because there's meaning and then there's the sense of value or purpose. And I know some people could say, well, it's all the same thing, but I do think it's different expressions, perhaps, of a similar energy or frequency.
Well, I've always been one to say that the differences in semantics can be important. And I am always one to have a good conversation about splitting hairs semantically, so. Preaching to the choir, yeah.
Well, it's challenging, and really, I think we go back. We talked about this not too long ago in a previous program that everyone has their own reality and their own view of life, and so your own sense of view of, again, right and wrong, or what's good and bad, and so on, and. So that it really does have a perception of then what is the meaning. Because I think if it's kind of like if you're an executive and you've got $1 billion, like Bezos and other people, and say, what's the meaning of life? And that would be, that would be a very different thing than someone who is working in a factory or going through a grind. It's what is that meaning of life? But, Maslow's hierarchy would also tell us that, unless we're comfortable and our very basic needs are met, we don't generally even question those things. We can't, because we're preoccupied with the struggle of life. I mean, if you have to get food, if you have to get shelter and, basic clothing, then your meaning of life is going to be very different. And are you really thinking about the meaning of life and spirituality? I mean, a lot of people, they tend to go to religion or, that savior kind of approach to life, like some spirit's going to come out of the sky and save them. And it's not to say that we don't ask for support on the many levels of the universe. It's just that Maslow's hierarchy would demand that, if your basic needs are met, you can ask about the meaning of life. So, you have all your needs met, you're going through life, and you're still unfulfilled. And I think that's what's interesting to me, is the people I know who have their basic needs met and they're doing okay in life, they're doing quite well, mm-hmm. is they aren't necessarily feeling like they're full.
Right.
They're still looking for something to fill them up, to make them feel better. Well, and what I generally see, though, is the materialism and keeping, they look for that rush to, or that adrenaline or the acquisition and things that make them feel full. And of course, it's all very temporary, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just depends on the thing, depends on how it interacts with your life. And truthfully, you can't. Yeah, material things can be fun. They can be nice to have, and they're great. But you're right. They're not going to fulfill that need that we all ultimately have, and we can't begin to address until we, like you just said, we go through all of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and we have all of our other needs met. Then we can realize the need and explore the need of finding that meaning and purpose to life. And you're right, I do believe there is a distinction between meaning and purpose, because what I was alluding to earlier was purpose. People with different purposes in life are fascinating. Well, yep. I would like to think that there would be more of a correlation on meaning insofar that we all have the meaning of our life to try to enrich this world in some way, no matter what our purpose is. But of course, it's going to be different for every individual, and different individuals will enrich life in their own unique, diverse ways. So, when I think about this kind of big, broad question, my pop culture mind cannot help but be drawn to, movies and TV. And one thing definitely comes to mind in this topic. I don't know, Dr. Hunter, if you're familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, are you?
I do. I do. I know it very well. I love that.
Yeah.
I like the book and I like the movie.
Right. So Douglas Adams wrote the book and, and it, of course, is the famous, the quote unquote, the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything, calculated by a supercomputer named Deep Thought over a period of 7.5 million years, the answer is 42. But nobody really knows what the question is, which I think is a great parable, isn't it? It's a because you have the answer, but you don't know the question. And that is so often the case when it comes to how we perceive things and our outlook on life, the fact that we might need to adjust it and realize that maybe we're not asking the right question. Maybe we're not searching for the right thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's very interesting because, you know, when you say that, what are the right questions? You know, when mm-hmm. we say, okay, what's the meaning of life? It's so broad. You know, and okay, oh, yeah. I have a better understanding of what's the meaning of my life. Well, it narrows it down a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's still kind of vague in a way. What does anything mean?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then, well, if it means something, who cares? Really? And so there's that, you know, kind of swirling around. So what is the real question? And that's that feeling of what is that fulfillment or the value? And that's, to me, more where I go, is there a value in my day? Is there a value in my life experiences? Is there a value in what I feel for myself or what I'm contributing elsewhere? What's that? You know, and again, I don't mean value in there has to always be an exchange, because I think the exchange of energy is always taking place, but
oh,
it's
absolutely.
How we measure it. You know, it's what kind of value do we put on experiences? You know, I think if we are living from a spiritual perspective to understand that being human is its own experience, but we're trying to remember our spirituality. So always living from that feeling or existential place as opposed to that very grounded, materialistic, physical reality, and then thinking about spirituality as a foo-foo kind of thing. Mm. Well, that's a nice thought, but I don't know. But if you really feel that, because no matter which way I analyze things, I still come back to answering to that something else inside me that feels there's a greater measure of who I am.
Right.
Even though I can't explain it. And that gives me a sense of purpose, of value, of meaning, if that makes sense.
Well,
I hope I articulated it.
I think so. I mean, we are all more than the sum of our parts, and there is something more to us than simply the material. I think, therefore, I am. We have this abstract thought. We exist in both the physical world and the, you know, abstract world. And, you know, I also like to think about what are a lot of the obstacles to people finding their meaning. And we've talked a little bit about this, mm-hmm. and I feel one of those obstacles is thinking that the meaning of life is to worship somebody else's life. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, mostly that could mean a dogmatic view on God, but also worshiping somebody else on this planet, be it an unhealthy relationship, be it anything. I mean, the worship of anybody else in is going to inhibit your search for your meaning. And
any kind of gratification, I'm so with you on that. I think it's top of the list, Michael.
Absolutely. I don't mean respect. I don't mean honor. I don't mean, you know, you follow and support somebody. I mean worship to an unhealthy extent, an unreasonable extent, to that they can do no wrong or it can do no wrong. And let's talk about it from the traditional religious dogmatic view. And this has been said many times by many people, so this is definitely not my original thought, but I mean, what enlightened deity would need or want the worship in the just for his or their subjects to just spend their entire lives worshiping them? It just doesn't make any sense. And how about I submit to you this? If you think it's necessary to, in a way, worship God, or I would say, instead, show that kindness and that devotion to just life itself, understand the value of life. And when you kind of shift it to you're worshiping the concept of life, to the health of life, to that kind of healthy balance of the natural world, well, and to the balance of ourselves, when you celebrate and you value life, you give it honor, you will be ultimately worshiping any deity there could possibly be in probably the healthiest fashion. But the entire, this notion to give your life over to a god is, well, I would hope that many people who have gone that route, they have found a way to help people through that medium, and great, I'm glad it worked out. But of course, with that, those good moments comes a long history of abuses and of misleading.
Well, I'm going to say, I don't think it's just in religion. I've got to say the so-called New Age movement has done itself a great disservice in many ways, yeah, because people want to be worshipped.
Unhealthy worship, right. Yes. And that level of, you know, it used to be just like, you know, I came out, of course, like it's been talked about in this program, I came out of a very, you know, a very conservative Christian religion, and it's... Well, how do I want to say it? You don't want to just bounce to the other end of the pendulum, you know? You don't want to just, okay, well, this is something that is overbearing, and it's, you know, there's no rationality to it, so I'm going to go to something else that's, you know, overbearing and has no rationality to it, that's just different from this thing that I'm angry with at the moment, you know? It's important to be grounded. And when I came out of that, you know, religion, I was really afraid of belief, because I believed that belief, it could hide the truth from you. If you believe something to be true without fact, and the truth makes itself apparent, will you be blind to it because you already think you know the truth? You already believe that you know the truth. So I viewed it as a dangerous thing. Now I realize it's, you know, it's a part of human existence. I would say it's a part of consciousness. You know, it's a part of any sentient existence.
So I think that really what we can safely say is if somebody believes that their life has some kind of meaning, they don't necessarily have to have the answer, except that knowing or that feeling becomes the driving force of where hope lives, where, you know, that drive, you know, because we can give up mentally or emotionally, but that spirit keeps going. So there's, I know my life has some meaning, even if I don't know what it is, and be okay with that, and just keep going through the experiences of hopefully some self-analysis and observation and making every day count for something, you know, and just trusting, because I think that's what spiritually, that consciousness of that universal force that each of us is connected with, it is the, I don't know, it's the fuel, if you will. And so when you know that that's that fuel, we don't necessarily have to know that there's a meaning.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm okay. I'm really okay after, you know, at this point in my life, to except that there may be no meaning at all, except to contribute to the energy of Earth and this in the cosmos. You know, I'm just a part of that in my own expression, my own experience, and it is what it is. That doesn't mean that I'm not trying to expand or keep working on myself to become more involved and interact, but I'm more comfortable with who I am, accepting that I'll never know the answer of the meaning of life. And that's just okay. You know,
so when we talk about not knowing the meaning of life, do we mean the meaning of what, of this all, you know, why are we all here, that kind of thing? Because I don't know that there is any meaning to that. I don't think there is any reason that we're all here. I think we're here because we're here. I think that life is infinitely complex, infinitely diverse, and infinite. It is, you know, once upon a time I had this thought, and it's, you know, again, probably not an original one. I'm sure I picked it up somewhere, but it was along the lines of, you cannot have something that is created from nothing. therefore everything that is essentially always has been and always will be, and that time is really relative concept to us because we're on that trajectory. But it makes me think about the cyclical nature of life, the fact that, you know, and this is my, again, something I've become more comfortable with as I've grown wiser in my old age, but I've decided that I do believe that life is cyclical. I personally think there's a lot of credence to the idea of the big crunch. You know, we had the big bang, well, the universe expands out, and now there's a thought out there that eventually everything will reach a certain point and then begin collapsing on upon itself. And it will create another singularity, which will lead to another Big Bang, the cyclical nature of existence. I also tend to believe that there's probably an abstract existence outside of this physical life. That, you know, it could be reincarnation, it could be many things.
I agree.
And that is a belief. Go ahead.
I think universally, I'm with you in principle. I think that, you know, energy is always, you know, it's a law of thermodynamics, right? Energy is constantly changing and recreating itself. And universally, I'm really comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean a lot to me, if you know what I mean, in daily life. But what does mean something to me, if I bring it down to we're on Earth and we're in, you know, we happen to geographically live in certain areas. We have this humanity. We have, you know, animals and, you know, plants and this extraordinary planet.
Absolutely.
That I believe we're here to create.
Oh.
And I don't think, I think the learning thing is really overrated, because if we're paying attention, we ought to have learned that already. And so how many times do you have to relearn the same lesson? I could use expletives in there, but
How many lives have we gone through? You know, like according to, you know, Siddhartha Buddha, the man who would become Buddha, he had unending amount of lives of various, you know, humans, animals, even gods, which in that culture are vastly different from what Western culture would consider a god.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's just an interesting thought, and you know, this leads to kind of something else that was on my mind. So let's again take, for the sake of this philosophical argument, the idea of reincarnation being true. If reincarnation is true, how does that affect the meaning of a life, or the meaning of life, or the purpose of a life? Is it, I mean, and you kind of just were just talking about this, but my thought was, is it based on that existence? Do you have a meaning or a purpose in this life? And then the next may be different? Or is it kind of all-encompassing? And I think you would tend to view it as all-encompassing. We're here to create. We're here to, I think, in perhaps in some ways also tend to the world. We are one of the only, we are the only species that we know of that is so fully self-aware that we can do so many of these things.
Well, see, I think that perhaps, and yeah, I'm with reincarnation, I mean, in that particular view of reality, because time, space is a crazy thing, and we're simultaneously living on all kinds of realities.
And,
but if I just bring my thinking down to, I'm comfortable with reincarnating, and I have my theories about collections of souls coming together, and, you know, with a common task. You know, and that evolution of, you know, we're constantly bringing new souls to the earth. And I think it is to contribute. And what would our species do with this place? Now, I haven't got that far to think about every other kind of life, but I believe for every one kind of species that goes extinct, another one is created. And or manifested perhaps from another time space. It's entirely possible. So I think that we're in this constant creation, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that gives me comfort to believe that there's a meaning here. It makes it horribly frustrating for me to see what we've done with this planet, but and sad at the same time. But that doesn't stop me from, you know, living in that, what I believe is the meaning. Now, in the event we self-destruct, which is possible. I mean, other civilizations allegedly have happened that way. Then, you know, we have an opportunity in time space to recreate. And I don't know what the cycle is in that, but then I narrow it all down to I'm here now. It's my perception of my existence and perception of what meaning I can give to my life today and to the life of others. And rather than, I used to live in a lot of anger about what people are doing to the earth. And I used to live in a lot of frustration and, you know, basically a piss offedness all the time. And I finally just said, you know, it is what it is. And we have every moment is a given opportunity. And I choose to live in the hope of it having a greater meaning and that every soul has an opportunity to do good and to do right. Now, I don't know what kind of forces or the yin-yang or the, you know, dark side, light side. I think we're all struggling with some of that to some degree. I don't think enlightenment is to be om on the side of a Tibetan mountain, because I think we're in a human body with all its complexities and intricacies. But it is about that propelling, that drive that gives meaning in some vague way that I don't quite understand. And I'm okay to not understand it, but I'm okay to also think a lot of people are stupid. You know, and naive, that perhaps is a nicer way to say it.
I would say that that's your human right and obligation. And I think it's up to every human to think that most humans are stupid. Because
well, we can laugh about it, but, you know, I think I said this to somebody years ago, that I think the day that I stop feeling upset with people is the day that I've given up.
You know, yeah, I know the feeling.
That's the fire in me that wants to speak up, that it's the fire in me that will challenge the abuse I see in the street of somebody picking on a homeless guy. You know, it's that fire in me that stands up for, you know, do no harm, do right. And it's that fire. And it's not about, how do I say, it's not about a comment about ego. It's not about that. I think we all have to have a certain amount of ego to go on. I think to say that enlightenment is no ego is kind of silly, because it's one of the ingredients in the human existence. And it's to balance those things. And you said earlier, Michael, about staying grounded and sensible as we move through our days, you know, and how what that means to us and acknowledging all those elements that we have to ourselves. Well, and to be okay with being angry, be okay with frustration, and be okay with sadness, but still know who you are and where I choose to live. And I choose to live in a place that, you know, what this means is that people have been stupid, you know, and this is not necessarily, it's good for a few people, but not good for everybody, you know, and I toss that around all the time.
Well, and that's just the thing. That's, you know, exactly why, you know, I joked earlier, everybody thinks, you know, that generally everybody else is either, you know, an a-hole or, you know, is not that smart, because that's just, we have our perspective, we understand our thoughts, but we don't understand everybody else's. Now, that being said, I would agree that not everybody has necessarily the same quality in terms of long-term planning, but that aside, you know, the truth of it is, we're, you know, when it comes to my personal philosophy on the matter, I don't think there is any meaning to life. I don't think that there is any reason other than what we give it. And that's okay, because we can build the world that we want. You know, we give it meaning. If we want the meaning to be the preservation of this world that we have, which I think is a just meaning, then we make it our meaning, because there is no meaning to life. There is only the meaning to your life. There is no overarching grand scheme. Again, this is my belief. In the sense that I think that certain things can happen. I think that for individuals and on localized levels, yes, a lot, not everything is coincidence. I do not believe that everything is coincidence. I think that it's a healthy mix. But, you know, life is too infinite. Life's too big to have one overarching meaning. We are here. We exist. And there are those that, and I don't have anybody decide on this one. I'm sorry. I can't remember where I picked this little tidbit up. But there are those that also say that, again, in that cyclical nature, you know, perhaps with that idea of the Big Bang, the Big Crunch, the eventual collapse of all matter back in on itself to create another singularity and then another Big Bang, do we repeat the same lives over and over again? You know, if you're any Stephen King fans out there, if you've read the Dark Tower books, you'll know what I'm talking about a little bit. I'm not going to spoil anything else than that, but it's just an interesting concept that all of this has happened before, all of this will happen again. And
different expression of the same thing.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I don't.
Anyway.
I don't. You know, I'm kind of with you on that one, and Wendy just said, I always say it's our life, we make it what we want it to be. And that may be true, and Shirley backs that up. You know, it's no meaning except the meaning we give it. Food for thought. Dr. Edward is saying, reminds me of one of NLP's presuppositions, which says the map is not the territory. You know, and you know, I think that it's a really good discussion to have. It's, I think it's important for us to check in with this line of thinking from time to time. And because it has us open our minds, question things again from a different perspective. How I thought about this a year ago, 20 years ago, is different than I am today. And I know I'm going to think about it differently, you know, in another 10 years if I'm still here. But, you know, people have often said to me, Vicki, you know, you speak in absolutes, and I said, well, I don't mean to. I'm emphatic about it, but I generally like to preface and qualify, but it's all theory. But you talk to me next week, and I might have something entirely different to say because I had a different, revelation about an intricacy that gives a new meaning to the way I think. And so, it's all... You know, I think Dr. Stevens said earlier in the chat, you know, it's subjective, or he's talking about the object disconnect, but it's subjective. You know, it's my point of view and just experiencing life and always keeping an open mind. Mm-hmm. But it really is subjective and what meaning you give. I think that, you know, the only thing I might caution people about when we say the meaning of life is what we give it, sometimes it's by circumstance and it's what's given to people, because there is a good population on the earth that is victimized by certain elements that have way more authority and power.
Well, we're not gods. We can't change the material reality of our world. And yes, we are all born into a circumstance that we had no choosing of. And that is very bad for a lot of people in a lot of parts of the world, because it is not a place where you have freedom of thought, freedom of expression, or freedom at all. And frankly, I'm not exactly thrilled about the state of freedom in the overall Western world as it is anyway. But I'm going to leave it that to that. But yes, I completely agree with you.
But I think that's part of the experience, though, is when we know suffering and we see suffering, and you have, why wouldn't you share? And I think there's a dilemma of human beings in that the herd mentality of, you know, well, I don't want to go hunting tomorrow, so I'm going to put a whole bunch of animals in a corral so they're easy to go pick off when I'm hungry. And so that lends to a certain selfishness. And I think that's, if anything, that we are needing to face in ourselves. And I'll say this particularly at this time, you know, in our economic climate and our social climate right now, is really about our selfishness and what we're being selfish about.
Mm-hmm.
That
Absolutely.
Isn't lending, because I think part of that, if there is karma, if there is some kind of reincarnated experience we're to learn by, and we have an opportunity to correct, to make better, toward enlightenment and greater consciousness, is that we ought to be sharing and taking care of one another. And that is the belief that I always go back to in my sense of self and how I'm connected with every other life on this planet in the universe, is that we're all entitled to the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Food, shelter, clothing, and no one should be left behind. It's just, that's my bottom line. And some people say, oh, you're a radical socialist. I say, you can call me what you like.
Well,
I don't care how you do it. Just clothe and feed everybody. What's the problem?
Yeah. You know? Well, and there's value to the idea. I mean, how much human suffering comes from the fact that other humans had to suffer, the fact that people went without. And in a time where we have the ability to do so, again, and that's just a philosophical outlook. If we have the means to do so, we should do it. And I don't care the mechanism you do, but we need to find the most rational way to get there. And no, I don't think that's radical at all. I mean, that's, I think everybody could be in agreement that that is a core need, and we should all strive to find the best way to get there. That we should,
I think probably the most fascinating thing I see in people, you know, when somebody's doing really well or somebody's had something really good happen to them, and they go, you know, other people say, oh, that's great. Well, good for you. And then the second part of that thought is, well, how does that affect me? You know? And then again, all these other underlying psychologies come out and motivations about people. We want to do good and do well. That's the thing. And if we can do well and do good, then why not? But
absolutely.
Most people who do really well are afraid of doing good, except give money. And then the people who do good are afraid of doing well because they separate from those who are doing good. And it's a really interesting dilemma in giving some meaning to life, you know. But it's just an interesting complexity that I've observed with people. But, you know, if anybody would like a card selected, we're certainly onto it. Put your name in the chat and we'll do the usual, you know, our two-card pull here and inner oracle cards, as well as a backup with the tarot. So happy to do that.
It's been
a great discussion.
It has been.
You know,
it has
been. We never run out of things to talk about.
No, but we often run out of time. It's a
yes.
It's a strange correlation, but you know. Yeah. And I'll just say this. You know. Well, I guess you know, it's a crazy world out there, and it's starting to kind of get back to normal. But at the same time, it's still on. I think it's going to be for a while, but I think, just like we've said earlier, don't face the world with fear, but with appropriate caution. And things are opening up, but be safe out there. And that's just what I'd like to put out. Take the appropriate precautions, take the necessary steps. Don't go out if you're immunocompromised. Of course, you don't need me to tell you that, but just wishing everybody listening just to be safe still. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
normal.
I'm going to say, I can't tell you the numbers of times that people have asked me, Vicky, do you think this COVID thing is real? And I'm amazed that, you know, my opinion would mean that much, but I'll just share this, that I think there's probably a little truth in every conspiracy theory that you ever heard. I don't think it matters.
What about the lizard people one?
Who cares? You know, I think that, look, there is a theory that every life form on Earth is a mirrored image of something else in the universe. So why not? I mean,
true enough.
The point being, though, that this virus, there's lots of viruses going around. So many people die of the flu every year. The problem that this particular virus is showing is the infrastructure problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, is there a virus? Yeah, and I think it's mutating by the day, by the way. That's just my thought. But I think that there's an infrastructure problem. When you have a mass number of people becoming ill at the same time, and I don't want to hear from people anymore, well, it just affects the immune, you know, people who already have underlying conditions. Like, who cares anyway? You should be protecting everybody.
There are people that have been in the prime of their lives and healthy that have succumbed to it. It's just, you cannot predict it that way, and don't just assume. So, again, don't live in fear, but take precautions.
Yeah.
And be smart. And don't be afraid of precautions. They're not... Well, again, don't want to.
And
get
don't
on a...
worry about what other people think.
Exactly.
I go inside
the store in my hazmat suit. People look at me like I'm crazy. It's okay. They're going to be fine.
That was funny, but, you know, I always wear gloves. I take wipes, and yeah. I go by intuition. I know when to wear a mask. I carry them with me in my purse in a plastic container. Mm-hmm. And it's just being sensible. So, number one, is there a virus going around? Yes. Is there always a virus going around? Yes. This one is particularly bad. So I think we should all pay attention. And the other is...
Sneaky.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have it for days and not realize it.
What this is showing us, and this is the opportunity, because I can't help it. I go to where's the opportunity here?
Yeah, great.
The opportunity is for us to make a correction in how we've been behaving and what we're going to do with our systems to create a better world. And that's the bottom line to me. Where are people going to take this? How can, rather than these polarities... And I'm really tired of people defending their opinions when they have no solutions. Because if they don't have a potential solution, I don't want to hear about it. And I don't want to hear that you don't want isolation because you wanted to go camping this weekend. I don't care. I care about the well-being of others, taking care of other people, and how can we make corrections. And this is a great opportunity for that, everybody. Mm-hmm. And so how will we collectively then move forward, and that excites me, actually. Don't get me wrong. I think, you know, a lot more has to be shown to us to realize how much in trouble we are, but that's okay. We'll move through that too if everybody can calm down and get on a same page of what kind of world do we want to create and set the selfishness aside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought. Yeah.
Well,
should we get on with pulling cards, Michael?
I mean, we can. I could rant for at least another half an hour if you want me to. But all right, we do have Dr. Edward up first, and he'd probably
waiting patiently.
I love this one. It's one of the best cards I could have pulled. It's especially for this conversation. Wild card number 9, blank. Whatever it means to you.
Boys.
Oh man, I know, right?
Yes.
Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be. It is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices, in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
Well, Edward, in support of that, I got the 4 of clubs, 4 of wands in tarot lingo. And I see this as promises, commitments, obligations. And so it's like having a blank slate and reevaluating where you are applying your energies and where your commitments are. And I think that this is a really great opportunity for you to maybe clean house a little bit and, you know, put your energies into areas that really make you feel good and can feel more productive. And so I see this as opportunity, and but particularly one where sometimes we can't keep the promises that we've made because they no longer apply, or there's new information, and so we have to correct some of those internal, you know, I'm good to my word kind of thing, but geez, my word had to change because my information changed. So he just wrote that resonates with me. So thanks for the feedback, by the way. So I think this is a really good time for you in doing that. A lot of thinking and sorting, but it's a good one. So I think we have Wendy up next, Michael.
All right, we do. And Wendy, for you, I pulled number 28, do no harm, do right. I think instrumental when it comes to the meaning of your life. Always remember that. Do no harm, do right. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good of all concerned, including yourself. do no harm, and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
Well, in support of that, I got another four, Wendy. It's the Four of Diamonds this time, so the Four of Pentacles. And what that says to me is, I think in a word, I've always summed that symbol up to me being a little miserly. And that's not a bad thing. It's hanging on to your energy and protecting your energy and your own resources and knowing what you can give away. In other words, you can't give away what you don't have. And if you give away the shirt off your back, you're going to get cold yourself. So it's being able to balance that a little bit. So even when you're working on, being that humanitarian and being good, and you well know the do no harm, do right, is just make sure you always keep something in reserve for yourself. So that's the message there from what I get for you. Hope that resonates too. So I think we have Dr. Shirley up next. Michael?
All right. And Dr. Shirley, I have number 14, Energy Shift New Chapter. Energy shifts are a natural result from increased awareness, knowledge, and new attitudes that naturally open new chapters in one's life. It is an excellent time to clarify your vision during this time of shifting energy. Reflect, gather your energy, breathe, and step forward with a renewed sense of direction. Out with the old and in with the new.
Oh, Shirley, you've got the Page of Cups here. Another Page of Hearts, and again, that's the communicator. The tarot is two parts. You get the minor and major arcana, and there's a communicator, a bridge card. And being the communicator with the heart is information. And so I think that, out with the old, in with the new, I think you've got some things brewing. There's some talking brewing, ideas brewing, and I feel like you're on the verge of a nice shift, a good change that's coming. You could have been, my sense is you've been waiting and waiting, and now things are going to start moving again. So good for you. I'm excited for you. You have to keep us posted on that one. So,
all right.
So do we have
I think that's it for tonight.
Yeah.
So, well, with that, I guess we're going to start wrapping up this evening. It's always a pleasure to have these discussions again. One of the highlights of my week, so thank you all for joining us. And next week, we're actually going to have Dr. Kelly joining us for a discussion. And the topic, get that here, is going to be the greatest gift you can give. So
you love those.
That should be an interesting one. And, until then.
As always, Michael, it's been good. And thanks for those. I know it's been a bit of a quiet night in the chat, but we appreciate those who have joined us. Mm-hmm. And
it makes it,
I was going to say, there's lots I know that we get listening to the archive, so we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us, however you do it. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.